to the Happy Market Research Podcast, your favorite place for strategies, stories, and insights from the world of market research. Brought to you by your host, Dan Fleetwood.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Happy Market Research Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan Fleetwood. And today we have Dr. Lori Michaels. She is an Associate Director of Market Research at Innovation Partners. Lori, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's great to be here.
Great. Well, for those who might not know you, can you give a quick introduction around your background, what your current role is at Innovation Partners?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So I was actually trained as a sociologist, so I do have a doctorate degree in sociology. And during my tenure at graduate school, you know, I spent a disproportionate amount of time reading, you know, philosophy of science. And I also spent 8 semesters teaching social research methods. So that's how I kind of became interested in research methodologies initially. And then out of graduate school, my first job was at an HEOR where I interviewed 144 chronic pain patients for an FDA study on the impact of the opioid crisis. Oh, wow. So that was kind of my, that was a great project, really important project to be a part of for me. And that was really my segue into the healthcare space. So currently I do lead a market research team at a biomedical consulting firm. And we do specialize in oncology, hematology, and rare diseases. So a lot of the products that we're working with tend to be pharmaceutical products, but they might also be like medical devices or screening and diagnostic tests as well.
It sounds like you've worked on some really cool research, or maybe not cool, but important, I should say, right? So that's great. Yeah.
I think it's cool.
Yeah. Okay, good. Cool and important for society. So that's great. You know, there's a lot going on in the industry today. I think it's no secret. There's, you know, AI, there's data quality, there's this, there's that. But I'm curious, like, what area of research or industry insights are you most passionate about right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I have to say, you know, in healthcare market research, the areas that are most interesting to me are those where there are some key unmet needs in terms of clinical outcomes for patients. So we do focus on hematology, so that is, you know, blood conditions, oncology, so that's kind of cancer more broadly, as well as on rare diseases. And I think especially in that rare disease space where there's maybe only 1,000 or so people who have a disease globally, you really do feel like you are making an impact. But, you know, even in, you know, the hematology and oncology spaces, even, you know, for conditions that are not so rare, we do work with clients that are developing therapies for some of the most malignant and aggressive diseases out there. So every time, you know, there's an improvement in efficacy that does save lives. And every time we see an improvement in the safety profile, we know that there are some advancements being made in terms of, you know, patient quality of life. So, yeah, I think for me, it's been really fun and really rewarding to learn about these products that do save lives and kind of contribute positively to this healthcare space.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, and what are some of those, like, if you can talk about it, some of those devices or some of the, maybe the recent innovations that you want to highlight or recent projects that you've done? I'm kind of curious to get a little bit specific here if you can.
Definitely. Yeah. And of course, without disclosing any, you know, proprietary information about clients, one project that we did recently that I thought was really important was a campaign we did for a client to raise awareness of this one particular condition that is very commonly misdiagnosed. And what's so interesting about this condition is not only is it rare, but the symptoms that it presents with are very unique. So it presents with extreme abdominal pain and gastroenterological symptoms, as well as some neuro symptoms. So like anxiety, brain fog, could be depression. So patients are presenting to the ER with this extreme acute abdominal pain, as well as, you know, some brain fog. And doctors don't really know what to think about it. They tend to treat them for the GI symptoms. And this condition is being misdiagnosed often as appendicitis, which, as you can imagine, it has led, unfortunately, to some unnecessary surgeries. And so, you know, raising awareness for that condition. And the condition, for the record, it's a very rare condition, but it's called AIP, or acute intermittent porphyria. So it's very rare. And yeah, I think it's like 1 in 200,000 patients, something like that. And many of those patients will never actually have an episode in their life because it is an intermittent condition. So you may never even be diagnosed. So in that sense, it's even more rare. So again, you know, some of those projects where you do feel like you're making a difference and just raising provider awareness of this condition so that patients don't undergo unnecessary surgeries, for example.
Yeah. Yeah. That's I've never heard of that, but it sounds like it's pretty rare. But What are some of the methods that you go into to, I guess, find out what's causing it, or that, hey, it's not actually, you know, appendicitis, it's something else. What are some of the methods and research, you know, I guess, projects or types of research that you do to help diagnose that?
Yeah, no. So great question. And I guess I should be clear, you know, so I do market research, so I'm not really, mm-hmm. you know, testing these products. What we're doing is, you know, a lot of qualitative in-depth interviews, moderating interviews with providers mm-hmm. who are experts in diagnosing and treating these conditions. So a lot of times, you know, I'm asking them how do they distinguish AIP from appendicitis, from some other gastroenterological mm-hmm. conditions. So I'm, you know, taking their insights and kind of condensing them for the client, so the client can, you know, broadly disseminate to providers who may not be experts in that, you know, particular yeah. condition. You know, people in, you know, small rural hospitals need to be familiar with these conditions. And right now it might only be, you know, a handful of medical experts, you know, at the top universities who are familiar with it.
Got it. That makes sense. So you're still using like IDIs and just discussions to help. Okay. That makes sense. I was thinking, wow, this is some research that I've never heard about in terms of what are you doing and how you're going about it, but it makes complete sense now. Thank you for clarifying that. I understand that. That's great. So in terms of, you know, topics in research, you know, we talked about some of the areas or research and industry insights that you're most passionate about, but what do you feel like isn't being talked enough about in market research? Is it different topics, techniques? Is there anything that comes to mind there?
That's a good question. So I think a couple things. I think kind of at a very fundamental level, I think, you know, one thing that we don't talk about enough is how to stay grounded in some of the basic principles of the scientific method. A lot of times, you know, we're caught up in these kind of like deadlines and logistics, and that is important. But if we do want to kind of have standout deliverables, we always want to make sure we're checking in with ourselves in terms of, you know, best practices and kind of how to authentically tell the story of the data. And of course, you have to be, you know, flexible and light on your feet when it comes to changing deadlines and, you know, the logistical realities. But I do think, you know, putting the best practices and research integrity first. Not that I think we don't talk about that, but I think mm-hmm. it's just something that it never hurts to keep in the forefront of our mind.
I think that's a good one, because with all the new advancements, and you kind of get, I'm specifically thinking about AI and how, you know, easy it is to just go type in a prompt and get information. But unless you're like rooted in the scientific method and using good techniques that are honestly, you know, pretty basic, but still very, I would say, important, you know, to our industry, it's easy to get away from that and not kind of circle back and say, okay, are we using the best here? Are we, you know, using like best in class? And so I do really appreciate that response, because I 100% agree that it's easy to get away from that when you're just focused on getting things out the door quicker and so forth, and all these other, you know, all these other things that come up, I'll say. So that's a very good point.
Yeah, and I think, and you bring up a great point too, with all these fancy technologies and, you know, statistical models, sometimes it's tempting, you know, to give clients like whatever is like flashy and new, but we do need to just like stay grounded. I always tell people that you need to know your data. You know, mm-hmm. I do all the qualitative analysis myself. I moderate the interviews myself. I do the analysis myself, and I do present the readouts to clients myself. Mm-hmm. And that's because I think, you know, it is important to have somebody who is close to the data.
Yep.
And yeah, we do kind of just the traditional market research projects, you know, concept message testing. Mm-hmm. We do some TPP research, value prop testing, mm-hmm. competitive intelligence, you know, all the methodologies that you're familiar with. Yep. And we do lean more qualitative. So probably about 80% are qualitative. I think, you know, those tried and true methods still.
Yeah.
Tried and
true for the reason. They are for sure. I'm curious, have you done any AI moderated interviews, and what you think about that? If not, that's okay. I was just curious. It's a lot of talk right now in the industry, and I know some of our clients are using it. We don't have that technology right now, but I've heard about it being used. So I'm curious, in your space where you're heavy on the qual side, what you think about that.
That's really interesting. So no, I have not used them myself. And I do wonder about the quality of mm-hmm. an AI moderator. I believe an AI moderator could ask all the right questions. I'm not sure it would understand the landscape enough to ask the right probes. Of course, yeah. you know, they're saying it's going to get better, so maybe it mm-hmm. will. Mm-hmm. But I do have concerns with AI right now. I mean, I've seen people try to write bibliographies, and AI will just like hallucinate references for them. Yep. Just pulling, you know, things out of thin air that look valid, but are just complete gibberish. Mm-hmm. So I don't discount its ability in the future. You know, when we do interviews now, the transcript is, you know, AI automated. It's a lot faster than waiting for humans to do it. Yeah. But even those, of course, you know, I need to go through and clean up very thoroughly. So, and especially in my industry where we do deal with rare diseases, it's very niche conditions as well as therapies. Mm-hmm. We deal with the reason we talk with such medical specialists and KOLs in these very like rare disease spaces a lot of the times is because this information is, it's not Googleable, right? There's mm-hmm. only like 5 or 10 experts in the world who might have this information. And so I wonder if AI would really have the background and ability to have those types of conversations. But I mean, I'm, I don't discount its ability in the future, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting too. And you bring up a good point. In your space, you're dealing with, you know, medical like conditions, probably prescription drugs, all these things. So you have to be sure that you're getting it accurate, right? You can't like say, oh, this might be right. And AI tends to hallucinate. So, but that's okay. So you really have to get it right, you know, from your standpoint. So I definitely appreciate that.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess, you know, I still do believe that as researchers, the strongest tool that we do have is kind of our brains. And sort of as a rule, I don't like to kind of willingly hand over my ability to think critically. But if it can be used as a tool and as an asset, then I am all for it, as long as it's accurate.
Yeah, that makes sense. Complete sense. Is AI the biggest challenge or change that you've seen in the industry recently? Or what's been a big challenge you faced in research? And maybe how did you overcome that?
No, great question. Yeah, I'd say, you know, before AI, we had bots to deal with, right? Mm-hmm. And you'd have like 80 million survey respondents overnight, and they were all, you know, complete garbage. You know, captures and verifications have kind of fixed that. But now AI can get around a lot of those. So I guess, you know, synthetic data or just completely false data can be a problem. Yeah, I guess I would also say, though, because we deal with such a specialized group of respondents and we do use customized recruiters who have expertise in dealing with these kinds of recruits, we get pretty well vetted respondents. We do make pretty strong screening documents to get them vetted in. Mm-hmm. So synthetic, falsified data hasn't been too much of an issue for me. Mm-hmm. I guess one trend, not, you know, to answer a different question, but I guess one thing that I am excited about, one change that I've sort of seen in this space over the last like 9 months or so, is really this a trend to incorporate more social and behavioral analysis, kind of into market research. And you know, as a sociologist, I always have viewed market research as a form of social research. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, seeing that push towards this type of, you know, inductive ground up analysis that can help disentangle things that people say from the things people do. I think that can really provide those rich insights into how people make decisions. You know, even in some cases, it can, you know, provide stronger insights in observational studies. So we can observe, you know, treatment paths for certain patients, but until you're interviewing the doctors, you can't really disentangle, you know, why they prescribe certain treatments. So it really helps you get, you know, those internal, external conditions. So yeah, I think, you know, asking the right interview questions to get at the, like, that social social behavioral analysis, I think has been, you know, really great to see an emphasis on that.
Yeah, that's great. And I like what you brought up in terms of behavioral analysis and kind of pairing that with actually what people say versus what they do. And I think in research, we know that these two things can be different sometimes, especially maybe more on the quantitative side, probably on the qualitative side too, when you're talking with someone, kind of teasing out, okay, what are the actual behaviors? But I do think it's interesting now. I feel like there's more of a push towards, hey, let's match up some behavioral data with some data that they, you know, what they said they did. So just to either help verify or even help add and make, you know, data sets more rich. So it's an interesting point there. And even, I'm sure you deal with this in healthcare research, but, you know, biomarker data and things like that and kind of including that. And I've seen that as a trend with some of our clients on the medical side.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And when you did ask me about challenges, one other thing I was going to mention is, you know, sometimes one issue in the market research space is kind of that rigid line that people can have between qualitative and quantitative data. And I think, you know, if you can use, you know, mixed methods, if you can incorporate, yeah, like biomarker data, any other type of data that could really present a rich case. Mm-hmm. I think that's always, it makes, you know, our deliverables stronger.
Yeah.
So no, I really agree with the mixed methods approach.
Yeah, no, that's good. And then in terms of, you know, AI, I think we need to, let's spend a little bit more time there just because it is such a big topic. How do you see that shaping the future of market research? I know you mentioned, hey, AI moderation might get better, but is there anything else that you can see how AI or any new technology is helping to shape the future of research, or how might it shape it in the future?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think almost every aspect of our job, from, you know, developing data collection instruments, whether they're surveys, interview guides, focus group guides, all the way to, as you pointed out, you know, moderating interviews, certainly collecting survey data, and then analyzing survey data. I think all of those aspects can be, you know, supported with artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Ideally, I think it could help us make our job faster.
Yeah.
You know, you're still going to need that human touch initially to meet with clients and iron out objectives. And of course, to feed, you know, information into the AI model, making sure, you know, you're getting it what the client needs. And then, of course, you know, some kind of human being to present in the final yeah. readout, and probably to write the report as well. Mm-hmm. I would, you know, lately I've been doing a lot of my qualitative analysis in Excel, essentially by hand, because we usually have small samples that don't really justify the use of, you know, NVivo or any kind of fancy analysis software. Right. And I would love to have AI, you know, kind of fill in some of my notes sheets for me. And it's kind of been one of my, you know, goals on the side this last 12 months or so. And mm-hmm. I have to say, I have not really been able to find a model that has worked for me yet.
Huh.
So I maybe it's, I've tried about like maybe 12 or so different programs. I've used like the free trials. And I'm not necessarily an expert on what to ask it. Mm-hmm. But I do hope, you know, I understand theoretically how it could be used, but if I am being honest, I haven't been able to leverage it for my own benefit yet.
That's interesting. And you tried 12 different sort of software packages or different applications. That's quite a bit in order to not finding out or not finding what you need from those. That's pretty crazy, actually.
And when I explain to people what I need, everybody assures me that AI can do this. And I just want to ask all of them, like, well, which AI software? Because at this point, I have tried several and I need something, you know, very specific to be done.
Yeah.
And yeah. I, you know, maybe it's me, but I don't know.
I mean, if you have that need, I'm sure others do as well, right? So
I would think so, yeah.
Taking data in Excel and then you have something you want done specifically with that to get it into your notes. So it mm-hmm. seems like it should be possible, but maybe you've uncovered, like, this thing that, you know, this white space there. So that's interesting.
Perhaps. Yeah. And again, you know, it could be user error. Another thing about AI is, you know, how AI literate do we expect people to be when it's only mm-hmm. existed for a few years? Not to be so negative about AI, because I do hope it can be better for the future. But yeah. right now, another concern that I do have is researchers, you know, feeding, you know, proprietary data or sensitive client information into AI as if it's sort of Google or a search engine. Mm-hmm. And in some ways it seems like an obvious thing not to do, but again, how AI literate can we really expect people to be? It is kind of like the Wild West out there. So,
yeah,
you know,
it is interesting. It's almost like this new language. It's not a new language. I understand that, but it's almost like this new language that came about a couple of years ago and everyone needs to like learn it and get on board with it quickly and learn how to use it. So from that standpoint, it is like, you know, something, this new phenomenon that everyone has to try to learn and make sense of in real time as we're getting up to speed. So it is interesting there.
Yeah. Yep. And there's, you know, we all have to take Excel courses in college and things like that. And I think some kind of AI literacy course could be helpful.
Yeah, I agree. I will say, I know when we spoke a couple months ago, you actually turned me on to this idea of AI and how it's not sustainable from like an environmental perspective. So I know we talked about this a little bit ago, but I'd love to get your thoughts on this, because it's honestly something I didn't consider until, you know, we were speaking, and now I'm seeing a lot of it. So I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, no, it's a really important topic. And you know, we've talked about some of the pros and cons of AI, but you know, there are some massive environmental concerns here. Atrociously unethical amounts of water, for example, are required to cool the infrastructure. Right now, AI does tend to be reliant on fossil fuels, so it does produce a very large carbon footprint. And then one other thing is these facilities currently, they tend to be built in areas that are socioeconomically disadvantaged, creating massive pollution. And I would probably argue, you know, that it is a form of environmental racism. So, you know, even if, you know, AI wasn't giving us hallucinations, and if it was giving us, you know, correct information, I do wonder how justifiable it is, you know, for us it to be, you know, arguably dumbing us down, creating environmental chaos. And then one other point, not to be too cynical, but I do think ultimately, you know, AI is one method that allows the capitalist class to access the work of creatives and intellectuals while systematically keeping that capital out of the hands of those same capitals and intellectuals. And I just think that that is something that I see my friends who are artists and writers just, you know, wondering if this is why they're getting less work. And so, you know, I guess one thing you can count on capitalists to do is to undercut the value of labor. So that's maybe that's another topic, but.
It is interesting. And then developmental concerns. And then I think even to your point around, you know, ownership of your own, you know, data or your own, you know, songs or your own art. And then what is that now? I mean, it is a question that I know, obviously, that I'm sure people are trying to answer and sort everything out. But I think there are some concerns here that probably are really justified that we need to at least figure out moving forward. I don't think AI is going anywhere, but there's got to be some happy medium, I think.
Yeah, and look, like everybody else, I hope that it will be used for good. But I think those are my concerns at the moment. And I think if we don't get those things ironed out, we have to question the kind of world we're building with this tool.
Yeah, that's a fair, very fair point. Very fair point. And I think probably more to come on there, you know, because it's a big topic for sure. I'm curious, you know, as we start to, you know, wrap up here, I want to get your take on some things around, you know, maybe a biggest challenge you face in research and how you overcame it. If there's any examples that come to mind there, I know the listeners love to hear, you know, those kind of examples. So if you have anything, I'd love to know.
Yeah, good question. So I think for me in my career, my biggest challenge has been getting up to speed on the world of oncology, rare diseases, and hematology. So I do have a strong background in research. You know, I can really nerd out about research methods. I feel comfortable with most of these methodologies. But I was certainly not trained as a medical doctor. And so for me, it's been, you know, delving deeper into that world of healthcare. So not only understanding, you know, these conditions and kind of common therapies to treat some of these conditions, also understanding the ins and outs of the insurance world. So we do a lot of research with payers who are medical or pharmacy directors at insurance companies who make decisions about which drugs should get coverage. And understanding that world has been an extremely steep learning curve. But I will also say, to the extent that it's been challenging, it has also been fun. So, you know, I always say, you know, you have to do your homework with any topic, with any project. You have to make sure you understand the methodology, how you're going to recruit the right sample. But then you also just have to kind of get up to speed sometimes on the actual topic itself. Yeah. So for me, learning about kind of the healthcare space was the biggest challenge. And I guess, how did I overcome it? Just a lot of reading, a lot of late nights, sometimes YouTube videos with, you know, Googling like different KOL lectures and things like that.
Right, right. No, that makes complete sense. And I think in any space, you have to know the industry, know the space you're working in, and know it well if you want to do research effectively in it. So I think that's a really great point. I'm curious around, you know, there's a lot of researchers out there that are looking to improve their approach to research. What's a piece of advice you'd give someone looking to improve? And I know you mentioned earlier, like, hey, don't forget the scientific method, but is there anything else there that comes to mind?
Yeah. So this might be kind of like another one of those like fundamentals. And I don't want to be a buzzkill, but honestly, like, do your homework. You know, it's funny to me that I do moderate interviews for a living because it's something that I've always been so interested in. I used to watch like Barbara Walters interviews as a kid. And to me, she really is the GOAT. And it is because she does her homework, you know, and she would always talk about how, you know, if she had a celebrity guest on, she would watch every other interview with them and she wouldn't ask them the same question. She would build on what the knowledge that they shared before and get, you know, new insights. So I think if you don't do your homework, then you will not generate new insights. But if you do understand, you know, the landscape of the topic and kind of what's out there, and if you're creative in asking questions and, you know, thinking of how to generate new insights on top of what already exists, that's, you know, how you really kind of succeed in this field, in my opinion. And the only way to do that is to kind of get yourself up to speed and do your homework and to find out what's already been said.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And Barbara Walters, she's great. And I've heard other podcast interviewers, like I know Tim Ferriss does that quite a bit, where he's like, I don't want to just ask him the questions that everybody else asks him. So, you know, he does his homework and really does some deep dives and asks questions around some different niches of areas of their life that no one's ever asked them about. So I think that's great. That's a great point. And is there, you know, in terms of like a book, podcast, or research that has shaped the way you think about market research, is there anything that comes to mind, any tools or tricks there you can let the listeners know about?
Yeah, gosh. I mean, this was a big one for me that I read in graduate school. It's a book called Learning from Strangers. It's by Robert Weiss, W-E-I-S-S. And he, you know, does a great job of showing how, you know, interviews are really a partnership. They do require that like trust and building rapport. And I think he gives a lot of great concrete examples from his own life. And I know that my interview style just comes right from that book. It was a really, really influential book for me. So Learning from Strangers.
Learning from Strangers. All right. That's interesting. I'll have to pick that up because it sounds interesting. I like that. Though this has been a ton of fun, Lori. And if listeners want to connect with you or learn more about your work, where should they go? Where would you point them?
Yeah. So honestly, I guess they can connect with me on LinkedIn. So it's like / Lori Ann Michaels. To connect.
Awesome. That's great. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming on the show today, and we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. It's been a blast.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening. And if you like this, feel free to subscribe, follow, or reach out to us. I'm also on LinkedIn. And as Lori mentioned, she wants you to reach out too. All right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you on the next one.